Gardening became so popular this summer that even the criminals got into it. "I don't believe it," said Morley, standing on her front lawn, waving at her garden. "They took 2 ornamental cabbage, my hens and chickens, and the smoke bush." Whoever they was had made off with entire plants, roots and all. That night, Morley said, "I'm going to get them." It took her 3 weeks. She got lucky one night. She woke up, it was 3:15 in the morning, and she couldn't get back to sleep, so she got out of bed, and she went to the window, and she looked across the street, and someone was on their hands and knees in the Schellenberger's garden, and it wasn't Betty Schellenberger. Now, when you apprehend a crime in process in the middle of the night, the only thing to do is to phone the police. Unless, of course, instead of the hands of reason, you're in the hands of the primal gland that controls the more satisfying emotions, like rage and revenge. If you listen to the gland of revenge, you put on your robe and one of your socks and one of your husband's socks, and you go out onto the street in your mismatched socks, across the street in your mismatched socks and your frayed robe that you'd never wear outside ordinarily. You go into your neighbor's yard, and that's what Morley did, stormed into the Schellenberger's garden and saw on his hands and knees a man digging up Betty Schellenberger's gold flame spirea. The man must have sensed he was being watched because without warning, he whirled around, gasped, and stood up all at once. He looked frighteningly like Rasputin. Bearded and dirty, wild and crazy, he took a step towards Morley, and Morley stood her ground and said, "Hello, Emil, I see you're doing some gardening." The man, Emil, began breathing rapidly, panting almost, wringing his hands as if he were washing them. I'm going away, he panted. "I am going to Greece," he said. "Have you ever been to Greece? They have castles there. I'm going on a charter flight, but it'll be safe because they don't line the planes with lead anymore. Before the rays got you, you know, and you got cancer. Did you know that? Did you know that?" Morley met Emil 3 years ago. He showed up one morning in front of her husband's record store wearing a pair of ripped pants and slippers and stood on the sidewalk for 3 weeks. "He's making me crazy," said Dave. "He's driving away business." "He's not driving away business," said Morley. "I've asked him to go somewhere else," said Dave, "but he's back every day. He can't just stand around on the street like that." Morley looked at her husband carefully. "Why not?" she said. Emil had appeared at a bad time, had appeared only a week after the notorious Flick Lady had disappeared from the neighborhood. The Flick Lady had been driving Dave crazy for 2 months. She appeared first in Woodsworth's bookstore, marched in one day out of the blue, went directly to the political section, flicked the picture of Brian Mulroney on the cover of each copy of On the Take. Snapping her finger on his nose and making her disgust clear with each flick. Yuck, yuck. And then she walked out of the store without saying anything else. She did this every afternoon, usually between 2 and 3. Dave tried to convince Dorothy, who owns Woodsworth's, that the Flick Lady was harmless and probably politically sophisticated. Held this position until she included the Vinyl Cafe in her afternoon rounds. For 3 months, the Flick Lady came into Dave's record store and went to the Petula Clark collection, held an album up to her chest and sang a tuneless rendition of Downtown. After 3 months of these daily visits, she stopped as mysteriously as she had started, disappeared. But now there was this man standing in front of his store like a rain cloud. One morning at breakfast, Morley said, "What's his name?" Dave said, "Whose name?" And Morley said, "The man on the sidewalk with the pants, what's his name?" And Dave said, "I have no idea." And Morley said, "How can you talk to him if you don't know his name, Dave? You should introduce yourself." And that's how Morley came to know the name of the man in the Schellenberger's garden, Emil. After Dave had introduced himself, Emil had moved across the street, and for the past 2 years, he has sat in the stairwell next door to the Heart of Christ Religious Supplies and Fax Services. The stairwell has become his place in the world, and slowly he has become part of Dave and Morley's world too. They don't know where he sleeps, but they know before he sleeps he goes to the Beaver Electronics store on Yonge Street and watches television on the set in the store window. He owns a universal remote control, and he can change the channels. And raise the volume loud enough so he can hear it through the store window. The first time Morley gave Emile money, she gave him $5, and Emile said, "That's too much." And he gave her $2 change. Other times he wouldn't take her money. "I don't need it," he'd say. "I have enough. I have enough." Sometimes he was too agitated to speak. Morley would see Emile and he would be staring at his feet, talking to himself. Other times he seemed almost normal, although always at the unkempt and dirty end of the normal scale. One day about a year ago, Emile showed up at the Vinyl Cafe with a shopping cart full of books. They were old library books he had bought for 25 cents each at a library sale. Math texts, novels by unknown authors, books of language instruction, romances. "If you want to take out a book," said Emile, "you have to take out a membership." Dave said, "How much? How much is a membership in your library, Emile?" And Emile said, "Don't be crazy, Dave. Everyone knows membership in a library is free." He said it patiently, as if he were talking to a child. So Dave filled out his name and address on a piece of paper and became a member in Emile's library. And he picked 3 books out of the shopping cart. And Emile said, "You can't take more than 2 books out at once, Dave." Dave put the books in a drawer under the counter, or thought he did. Forgot about them for a month until Emile appeared one morning and said, "Did you know your books are overdue? You owe $5 in fines, Dave." Dave said he was still reading the books and would pay the fines when he finished them. He said, "Come back in a few days," and he spent a few days looking for the novel, which he couldn't find, and Emile came back 2 more times and told him the fine was up to $7, and then to $10, and then, just like Dave had hoped, seemed to have forgotten about the books and the fines. Now, Dave doesn't believe in giving Emile money. He's argued with Morley about this. "It's crazy," he says. "If he gets money, he buys cigarettes and lottery tickets, and I'm sure he loses the tickets. Why would you give someone money so they could throw it away on lottery tickets?" Now, Morley doesn't have an answer to this. "I don't care what he does with the money," she said. "He doesn't take it if he doesn't need it," she said. "Sometimes he won't take it." "That's crazy," said Dave. "Everybody needs money." And that's why Morley felt so betrayed last month as she stood on the Schellenberger's lawn at 3:15 in the morning, that of all people, it would be Emile standing there with a Schellenberger's gold flame spirea in her hands. But instead of getting angry, she said, "Is that for your garden, Emile?" And Emile said, did you know the moon is a hotbed of hostile alien activity?" And Morley said, "Emile, I want to see your garden. Will you show me your garden tomorrow?" And Emile said, "Yes." And Morley said, "Good night," and went back to bed. And she went the next day at lunch to the stairwell beside the Heart of Christ Religious Supplies and Fact Services and said, "I've come to see your garden, Emile." And Emile said, "There." He was pointing to one of the large concrete boxes that line Bloor Street. And sure enough, nestled around the skinny trunk of the ginkgo tree that the city had planted and occasionally watered, were Morley's hens and chickens. And Morley went home that night, and at supper she told everyone what had happened to her plants, and she said, "What would you do about that?" And Sam said, "Call the police. Call the police and send them to jail. He stole." And Stephanie said, "He's retarded. Just take the plants back." And Dave said, "What did you do?" And Morley said, "The ornamental cabbage have aphids. I took him stuff for the aphids." The garden, however, is not the biggest thing that happened to Emile this summer. The biggest thing that happened to Emil happened on the last Saturday of July. On the last Saturday of July, Emil won the lottery. Not the big prize, but big enough, he won $10,000. And on the Monday following the last Saturday of July, Emil collected his check and took it to the bank and had it cashed, $10,000 in $20 bills. And he stood on the street in front of the Heart of Christ Religious Supplies and Fax Services, and he gave $7,000 away. Actually, he misplaced $2,500 somewhere, so he gave away $4,500 because he had $3,050 left at the end of the day. He gave Morley $500 because he didn't just give the money away to anyone who walked by. He gave it to his regulars, to the people who regularly gave him money or regularly stopped to talk to him. And he gave it to them in a way that it made it impossible for them to refuse. It would have been patronizing not to take it, said Morley. It would have been an insult. So I took it, but I know what I'm going to do with it. What are you going to do with it, said Dave. I'm going to give it back to him, said Morley, bit by bit. It'll just go to the lottery, said Dave. So what, said Morley. It's his money. As soon as Morley had left, Dave went across the street himself to see Emil, to see what was happening. Pretty sure Emil would offer him money. After all, he knew him longer than anyone. Said, congratulations, Emil. I hear you're a big winner. When do I get my share? He meant it as a joke, but Emil took him seriously. No share for you, Dave. You still owe your library fine. Dave and Morley aren't sure what happened to the money Emil didn't give away. They know he had a haircut and a shave. He looked great for a week. So great, Dave almost didn't recognize him the first time he saw him. And he bought himself a portable, battery-powered television and a chair. And all August, he sat on the chair in his stairwell and watched his television. The chair was eventually stolen, and he lost the television somewhere, or someone took it away from him or something. Or maybe he gave it away. It's okay, he said when Morley asked him about it. The battery was going. And it only got Canadian channels. You can't get cable on those small sets. So it's all gone now. Or it's not all gone, because Morley still has $425 that belongs to Emil. She keeps it in a glass in the kitchen in the back of the cupboard behind the canned soups. She's already given him $40 in cash, and she bought some feverfew, a plant that looks like a daisy, and she gave it to him to plant in his box. It's a herb that people say can cure fevers. A pretty little plant, and the leaves smell good when you work around them, and best of all, it seeds itself, which means it'll grow again next summer. Tough little thing. But you need to be tough to live in a concrete box all winter, along with the Coke bottles and the straws. And the feverfew is tough enough for that, and not without dignity. And last weekend, when she was grocery shopping, Morley spent another $5. She bought a box of grape hyacinth bulbs, and she planted them one night last week when Emil had left for the night, thinking as she scraped at the hard dirt in Emil's box that they'll come in the spring and they'll surprise him, thinking about something she had read by Rohinton Mystery, something about that fine line between compassion and foolishness, kindness and weakness, wondering always about how firm to stand, how much to bend.